Chapter 13. Conversations with the General. The invitation was completely unexpected. One morning during that same 1972 visit, I was sitting in an office I had been given at the Instituto de Recursos Hidrólicos y Electrificación, Panama's government-owned electric utility company. I was poring over a sheet of statistics when a man knocked gently on the frame of my open door. I invited him in, pleased with any excuse to take my attention off the numbers. He announced himself as the general's chauffeur and said he had come to take me to one of the general's bungalows. An hour later, I was sitting across the table from General Omar Torrijos. He was dressed casually, in typical Panamanian style, khaki slacks and a short-sleeved shirt buttoned down the front, light blue with a delicate green pattern. He was tall, fit, and handsome. He seemed amazingly relaxed for a man with his responsibilities. A lock of dark hair fell over his prominent forehead. He asked me about my recent travels to Indonesia, Guatemala, and Iran. The three countries fascinated him, but he seemed especially intrigued with Iran's king, Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The Shah had come to power in 1941, after the British and Soviets overthrew his father, whom they accused of collaborating with Hitler. "Can you imagine," Torrijos asked, "being part of a plot to dethrone your own father?" Panama's head of state knew a good deal about the history of this far-off land. We talked about how the tables were turned on the Shah in 1951, and how his own premier, Mohammad Mossadegh, forced him into exile. Torrijos knew, as did most of the world, that it had been the CIA that labeled the premier a communist and that stepped in to restore the Shah to power. However, he did not know, or at least did not mention, the parts Claudine had shared with me about Kermit Roosevelt's brilliant maneuvers and the fact that this had been the beginning of a new era in imperialism, the match that had ignited the global empire conflagration. "After the Shah was reinstated," Torrijos continued, "he launched a series of revolutionary programs aimed at developing the industrial sector and bringing Iran into the modern era." I asked him how he happened to know so much about Iran. "I make it my point," he said. "I don't think too highly of the Shah's politics, his willingness to overthrow his own father and become a CIA puppet. But it looks as though he's doing good things for his country. Perhaps I can learn something from him, if he survives." "You think he won't? He has powerful enemies, and some of the world's best bodyguards." Torrijos gave me a sardonic look. "His secret police, SAVAK, have the reputation of being ruthless thugs. That doesn't win many friends. He won't last much longer." He paused, then rolled his eyes. "Bodyguards? I have a few myself." He waved at the door. "You think they'll save my life if your country decides to get rid of me?" I asked whether he truly saw that as a possibility. He raised his eyebrows in a manner that made me feel foolish for asking such a question. "We have the canal. That's a lot bigger than Arbaint's and United Fruit."